So when I first started thinking about the topic of harmony, of course, music is an obvious, that's probably the most common thing that comes to people's mind. And so when Connie and Chet and I were thinking about, you know, what songs to sing, we thought about songs that have not only have traditional harmony where, you know, two notes are following together, but songs where there's a separate melody that is completely different than the harmony. And so, and then the second song we sing, that will be even more dramatic. But it's an interesting concept that you can have two completely different melodies that are played together and sound lovely. There's a pleasing resonance to it, and that's what we're hoping for. So the song, the lyrics to that first song, I chose that one first because it talks about nature and make a space within me. Open me, you know, it's asking to be open, to be aware, to find, to be able to see the harmony that's everywhere. And I think nature is a wonderful place to witness that and to feel, especially for me, to feel it. It has a very powerful effect on me. And recently I was at a workshop where I was asked to imagine an image of strength. And I realized when I was preparing this talk that the image that came to me, yes, it had strength, but what it gave me was harmony. And it was when, I'm not sure my exact age, I was maybe 14 years old, and I wasn't a real happy person at that point, suffered from some depression, and I was out for a walk, and it was a fall day. And I found myself at the place that us kids called the cliff. It was on one side, it was a sloping grassland that went, you know, pretty far up, and then it was a complete drop off. And I don't, you know, kids are fascinated with places like that. My brother used to climb down the slope, you know, the drop off part. Thanks, you know, boys. But so I was there by myself. And not happy, and it was a fall day, and the wind was blowing, maybe not quite as strong as today, but it was blowing powerfully, and it was blowing against me. And I just stood there and just felt that wind, and it was a mystical experience for me, although at the time I wouldn't have called it that because I wouldn't have known to call it that. But it changed the way I felt. And it brought me back into a place of harmony. It's almost like that wind just cleansed the despair from me. It was wonderful. And I remember walking home and feeling differently. I didn't know what had happened. I didn't know why it had happened. But I sought out nature for a healing. And it produced it powerfully. So, and in that change, I think it was harmony that I was really feeling, that I released the imbalance of what I was feeling, and we're going to talk more about that, like the spiritual truth about my life. I released the discontent that is not the spiritual truth, because our lives are always unfolding in divine order if we're in a place to see it, make a space within me to see the perfection, to see the harmony. The other thing that wind, you know, I don't know if it's from since that day or just always, but wind is a very powerful metaphor for me for spirituality, because it not only does it have a lot of power, but it's an invisible force. And I think of spiritual, you know, the spiritual power, the spiritual force in the world, you know, that's invisible. And yet that moves things and changes things just like the wind can. So I really love the wind most of the time. Now today it's really powerful. a little bit much maybe, but So the other thing that came to me about creating harmony in my life is a spiritual practice that probably a lot of you already have, and that's journaling. Journaling can reveal one insight after another for me. And it's very interesting because there's times in my life where, I don't know, I fall away from the practice, and then just recently, and it was in meditation, it was just like so clear that I needed to be journaling again. And so I sat down to journal, and ideas just laid out on the page about this talk, about all kinds of different things. So,
can you describe journaling for people who haven't tried it?
Okay, there's infinite ways to journal, but journal came from the tradition of the diary, and it's really developed to be much more sophisticated than that. The diary was, dear diary, today this happened and that happened. It's evolved into, for me, it's, dear spirit, I'm writing a letter to spirit, I'm having a conversation with spirit, I'm writing a prayer, or I'm looking for guidance. And if I just let the ideas flow and let the words come, I'm usually just very pleased and amazed. Often, like, wow, where'd that come from? It doesn't feel like it's me. It's almost like, dictation or something. The way things can flow at times, not all the time, but many times. So in high school, I was journaling, but it was probably a little more like a dear diary, but it was all about, the angst and the heartache and what was wrong. But it was a good thing to get out those emotions on the page. It was therapy for me, absolutely. But I always tore it up. Tiny little pieces, so that no one would see it. I would never want anyone to read what I'd written. I don't feel that way today. But it's fascinating because there surprises come and revelations come, and it can really be life changing. So I would highly recommend that practice. So I wanted to tell you a little bit about this. The story that I heard on NPR back in January, and the title of the story was "Editing Your Life." Editing Your Life Story Creates Happier Endings. And let me just read you the first part, because I went and got the transcript for it online. A 4-foot-tall monster terrified my nephew so much that he ran deep into the store. On the way back out, he simply couldn't face the statue. He jumped into his mother's arms and buried his head in her shoulder. For hours after the incident, Lewis was stuck. He kept replaying the image of Frankenstein's face in his mind. "Mom, remember Frankenstein?" he asked over and over again. He and his mom talked about how scary the statue was and how Lewis had to jump into her arms. It was like a recorded loop, my sister said. But then suddenly, Lewis's story completely changed. My sister was recounting the tale to the family, how they left the store, how they had to walk by Frankenstein. And then Lewis blurted out triumphantly with a glint in his eye, "I peed on him." In that instant, Lewis had overpowered Frankenstein, if only in his mind. So further on in this piece, a psychologist, Tim Wilson, said that story editing, when you tweak your story, that it can change your experience of it, and it can shift your perspective. And so I'm saying that Lewis shifted his perspective to a more harmonious place where he wasn't in fear. He stood up. He stood up to Frankenstein. He peed on him. I mean, it's a funny thing to say, but that is definitely a statement of, "I'm not afraid of you." The same concept of editing your story was used with college students who said that they're bad in school, and the way that they they adjusted it was they told the students that everybody fails at first. And so if the students had the idea, it's not that I'm a bad student, that everybody fails at first, it allowed them to improve their grades. It like took the pressure off, you know, that this is a normal experience to struggle in school. And it also, the students that had this intervention also were more up to stay in college, whereas the ones that didn't get the intervention were more up to drop out. They also use this technique to help college students with social acceptance, that when they were making statements about being socially accepted, then they were socially accepted. And they also used it with parents who abused their children with some success. So it's so interesting when, we use words. You know, you could write it, but you can also think it. But to change our idea of who we are. And so the students changed their idea of being a bad student to being a normal student and having a normal experience. And that really shifted things for them. So at the end of this NPR piece, they said, well, we're not really sure why it works. And I was giggling because I thought, really? They obviously don't know science of mind. And so, you know, we say change your thinking, change your life. It really is the same. There is that parallel there. And when you can shift your idea about who you are and recognize that you're a spiritual being, I think that's when life really changes. That's when you move through life differently. That's when you see everything differently. It's profound. It is really profound. So if you take this idea of the editing the life story and blend it with the Abraham Hicks material, I've been reading the book, The Astonishing Power of Emotions, and there's a discussion about, you know, thoughts. There's two kinds of thoughts. There's the upstream thoughts, which are the ones that don't feel good, that are, you know, create discomfort, uneasiness, or, you know, worry, or, you know, worse. And then there's the downstream thoughts that bring a sense of comfort and ease and harmony. So I think that's really what we're trying to get at, is if we can be in a place of harmony, then everything flows, we're comfortable, it feels good. And when I think about taking a thought that is uncomfortable or worry or challenge, something that's going on in my life, and think about this process of, all right, how can I shift the statements that I'm telling myself that don't feel good? How can I shift those to a more positive place? I think of how is spirit looking at this situation in my life? How is my inner being looking at the situation? Because part of the discomfort, that the emotional piece that I'm feeling, is because I'm out of alignment with the truth, the spiritual truth of what's going on. And so I use the situation in my life, which I'll give you the example of, but I started asking, what if? Well, what if it's this way instead of what I'm thinking? You know, what if positively, obviously. And so the situation that I used was teaching this English class to international students. And I'm not an ESL teacher. I'm a regular English teacher, traditional English teacher. And so here's some of the statements that I was telling myself that didn't feel good. I'm really not serving these students in the best way. They would be better off with an ESL instructor who is trained to work with this population. I'm really not seeing as much progress as I had hoped for by the end of the term. And the last one I made, a statement was, there is so much work reading all these poorly written papers and not only commenting on how to improve their message, but correcting all the grammatical mistakes. So you can see where that didn't put me in a very good place. It's like, this is not serving me. So after working with the what ifs, I took that first statement, I'm really not serving these students in the best way, and I said, and you know, so think of big picture. So when you're changing the statement that doesn't feel good, think of big picture, you know, what's the possibility? I said, what if I'm serving these students in ways I can't even imagine that goes way beyond their writing skills? Because I'm a caring presence in the lives of these students who are far from home, they may feel the support of the space, you know, the supportive space of the class. What if they learn what they need to learn for the time we're together? That feels pretty good. That feels pretty good. The second statement, they would be better off with an ESL instructor who was trained to work with this population. I said, what if because I'm not trained in the traditional methods of ESL, I may come up with some creative ways to make writing more interesting and meaningful to them? You know, so that felt really good. The third one, I'm not really seeing the progress that I'd hoped for by the end of the term. So my big picture statement is, what if the progress comes in many ways? That they are progressing in recognizing who they are and what they believe, or that they may be maturing through their willingness to share from their unique experiences in a safe and appreciative environment. What if they are progressing in their level of comfort in writing what they think instead of regurgitating from a source outside themselves? What if they are progressing through recognizing the wonder of their own lives as I encourage them to choose what they want for their future, to identify their dream job and what they want in every area of their life and have a vision for that? That feels good. Mm-hmm. That feels really good. So then the last statement about, you know, there's so much work and grading the papers and all of that. What if I love helping them communicate their ideas more clearly? What if I'm using writing as process and it serves them and they're learning an effective way to improve writing through the steps that I present? What if this brings a greater awareness of what is involved in writing a clear and meaningful message? So those are the kind of big picture statements that I came up with for that situation in my life. That really, I remind myself of that. Anytime I start going in the other direction, I think, no. I am here by divine appointment. There's a reason I'm here. And that feels really good. So the other what if that I had here was, what if I keep it light and trust that I'm teaching by divine appointment, that I have all the skills I need, that I am intuitively guided, that the writing process brings its own rewards to all who use it. So things like that, and you're going to have the opportunity to look at that process in the second part of our time together, where you can experiment with shifting to a bigger perspective, to the perspective of your inner being. What if? So keeping things harmonious. If we can keep things harmonious, we can attract more experiences of harmony in our lives. So the thing that we need to remember is, that I need to remember, is when I'm feeling stressed, when I'm feeling uncomfortable about something, that I'm really shutting off the possibilities, those what-if possibilities. My mind is not open to that. And, you know, I think it's sort of natural in some ways, from the human experience, to, if you get too far down, if I get too far down in my thinking, you know, it's like I don't even want to look at shifting. It's very interesting. I don't know if anyone else has that experience, but, and so that's why these kind of activities sort of train us to recognize when things aren't going the way we want them to, when things aren't feeling good, to be aware that, okay, I need to shift something here. And to recognize that we can shift. We have the ability to shift the thought and change the experience. And to me, that's one of the greatest gifts of science of mind that there is, that we can do that. We have the power to do that. In regards to journaling, there's another article that I came across quite a while ago that it talks about that journaling can relieve stress. And they did some research and they said that people who journal, they go to the doctor less, they miss less work, and even the American Medical Association did some research and found that there was a reduction in symptoms of people with asthma and rheumatoid arthritis when they journaled. And they were encouraged to journal 20 minutes a day about their worst life experiences, which I thought, well, that's interesting. But, you know, when we write, we process things. And when you write with your hand rather than typing, the reason I think that we process things differently is that your brain cannot keep up. I'm sorry, your hand can't keep up with your brain. And so as you're writing, the brain has to slow down. And as the brain slows down, things surface. Things come to the surface that maybe they wouldn't come to the surface otherwise. I had a very interesting experience years ago in my first marriage. I was upset and I don't even know about what. But I was writing about it. And I was writing and I was writing. And all of a sudden, I wrote something that totally surprised me. And I had a revelation that I was upset about something else, not what I thought. And I don't know if I would have had that revelation if I hadn't been writing. So it's sort of a mystical thing, that the stuff that comes through when you write. I just can't recommend it enough. Another interesting thing about writing, Julia Cameron, who probably some of you know from the Artist Way books, she says that when you write for yourself, when you write about your life, it's a statement to the universe that you think your life is interesting. That it's worth writing about. Yeah. So that that stuck with me when I saw that. So creating harmony. If we think about, you know, earlier when I talked about the songs, you know, where it has a melody doing this and then there's another melody doing this, we see that in life. I see that in my own marriage, and you see it in a lot of couples where, you know, they say opposites attract. Not that Jim and I are opposite, but, you know, he's very much into the physical world. He's a building engineer. He repairs things. He maintains things. He does home remodeling. He's happy doing, you know, working with his hands. And I'm more, you know, teach yoga and meditation, and I like to plan retreats, and, you know, I'm more into the non-physical aspects of life. And so there's times when creating harmony with those two varied beings, we have to work at it. And it requires showing interest in the other person's interest, maybe even when you don't want to. On occasion, anyway. And appreciating their uniqueness and their gifts, and recognizing, you know, in the present moment, how good it is to be together, and that you're sharing a life with someone that you care about. And because if I were to focus on, oh, I wish Jim would do more spiritual stuff, oh, you know, why isn't he coming with me, or, you know, that kind of thing, then I'm bringing discontent. Then I'm, you know, then I'm out of alignment with my inner being's idea about our relationship, which is that it's harmonious and loving and wonderful. So wanted to just address that a little bit. And I'm, you know, that's probably true not just in partnerships, but also, you know, in work relationships and people that you're with in general. The other thing that came across my mind as far as harmony goes, I read in the Heart Math, which probably a lot of you are familiar with, this new science. It's been around 20 years. Where they science can study the heart and the electromagnetic field around the heart, and they can measure it with, you know, their technology. And, you know, they find that certain practices expand that heart, that electromagnetic field, and cause shifts in the body and all kinds of benefits. But the other thing that they found out was when you have a thought, that it has a frequency, it has a vibration, and, you know, and that's a lot about the law of attraction. But it's not just that when you have thoughts, you know, that they're attracting like thoughts. It's also these thoughts have a frequency that other people can pick up on. And so even if you're not saying it, but you're thinking it, that frequency is going out and people can pick up on that. And so to have more harmonious thoughts, you know, you can act a certain way and be thinking differently. And people, there's a chance that people can pick up on that, you know, that either you don't feel sincere in what you're doing. And so really need to be in alignment with what you're thinking, that what you're thinking is harmonious, and you're acting that way as well to create greater harmony. So we see children living in harmony. You know, they want to play, they want to, it's just natural for them, isn't it? It's just natural. And they're our teachers. They're a wonderful example of what is possible to be joyful and to play and see the wonder of life. So thank you all for listening to me today.
Thank you.